Fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.
Finding pregnancy support you can trust is worth celebrating. Getting it on sale is worth belting Beyoncé in your car. That's right. Ritual's Black Friday sale is on. Support your body's new nutrient needs with their clinically backed prenatal multivitamin. Or give back to your gut with Natal Biotic, a probiotic supplement for trying, pregnancy, and postpartum to support digestive, vaginal, and baby's immune health. At Ritual, quality is top priority. All of their supplements are clean, third-party tested for heavy metals, and 100% made traceable. Because you deserve high-quality support at every stage of your pregnancy journey. Cut prices without cutting corners and get their best savings on their best supplements with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pregnancy support. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Here we go again then, folks. Sat at the bottom of the runway ahead of a 46-game championship season. It all starts again for Norwich City on Saturday at the Kassam Stadium against Oxford United. And we're here to preview that, to speak a little bit about the events of this week. What a brilliant chat to bring you with Norwich City fan and author Ed Cousins-Lake as well. This is going to be a bumper pod to kickstart, hopefully, the championship campaign. And depending on your mood, it may be seatbelts on and prepare for turbulence, or it may be, hopefully, and we're all fingers crossed for this, plain sailing into the skies. I'm your host, Connor Southall, joined by Paddy Davitt and Samuel Seaman to look ahead to the start of the championship campaign. Boys, how are we feeling ahead of the new season? Paddy, let's start with you. It is new season eve that we are recording this. On a scale of 1 to 10, where are your excitement levels at the moment?
Yes, I think I might have done too many of these, so I can't say I'm tipping over a 6, mainly because I'm very intrigued. I mean, you mapped it out perfectly there. You know, what are we going to get? And I don't think anybody knows. Wrote a piece earlier in the week. You know, is it a season of incremental gains and a platform built for years two and years three to sort of hark back to the Glenn Riddersdale chat we had out in Austria? Or do we somehow short-circuit the process and we get 18, 19 Pete Farker, in which, you know, in terms of a lovely, entertaining brand of football, they're ahead of the curve. The players they bring in really hit the ground running, and he massively improves the ones he already had here. And we look back now in May and we're in the Premier League. So we, as in the Royal We, but... So I don't know, I'm in a bit of a holding pattern, so maybe that's reflective of my mood. Certainly, I wouldn't go all out and tip over to a 7, 8, 9, 10, but we'll say 6.
Sam, where are you on the old scale?
I'm maybe 6 or 7. I'll say 7 and just tip it over a little bit. I think if there hadn't been so much going on the last few days, I would have had more time to sort of look ahead to it and get excited about it. But because Norwich City's transfer window seems to have kicked into another gear in the last week or so, that's mainly what I've been focused on. Got a really busy day today as well, with obviously the press conference for the Oxford game. Lakers will be down, or Chris Lakey, for those who obviously aren't part of our team, will be down to chat to Ashley Barnes later. And so it does feel like there's quite a lot going on today. Once today's out of the way, and tomorrow is hopefully a bit more of a relaxed day, I feel like I'll have more time to sort of look ahead to the season and get excited about it. But I do think there's a lot to look forward to. A new style of football that, yes, we've seen in pre-season, but it always feels slightly different actually in competitive action. We haven't seen Norwich, obviously, against Championship opposition under Johannes Hoftorp yet. So I'm intrigued to see how they sort of match up to opposition within this division. I'm looking forward to it in that sense, but purely because of the lack of time to really think about it and the amount of stuff that's gone on. I think I'll need to probably assess my levels again tomorrow. But right now, it's probably similar to Paddy, hovering around a 6 or a 7. What about you, Connor?
Oh, yeah, I Yeah, I've had a bit, unlike you boys, I had a bit more time to think about it today. So yeah, I'm probably tipping high sevens, I reckon, heading into Saturday. Of course, after 10 minutes, that could be drastically reduced if the game goes in the maybe the worst case scenario, but we shall see. But yeah, always looking forward to a new season. And actually, I was walking my dog this morning. It was about 7 o'clock, and I saw another fellow dog walker, and he just turned to me and went, you excited for the season? And that was sort of the first time it was like, oh, blimey, yeah, we are really close now. But he was. So I think the general consensus amongst fans that there is excitement. And as you boys have mapped out, there's plenty to be excited about. I hope it's okay with everyone, and I hope nobody's going to panic, but we are going to do this pod in 3 installments. So I hope that's all right, which is rather apt this week after everyone's got themselves a little bit worried about that. So we're going to start with obviously a chat about the present and some of those transfer related activities. We're then going to head into obviously that chat with Ed Cousins later that I spoke about. He's got a new Norwich City book out, which I think will be of interest to a lot of people out there. And certainly, hopefully, is going to make our away game journeys more fun. But we'll come on to that later and we'll let him explain. And then the final installment of the pod is going to be that season preview. I'm going to nail these two down. I probably might engage as well in terms of some hard and fast predictions, which I think went really well last year for us. So we'll see how that goes. Paddy, it's been a busy week, hasn't it, in terms of Norwich City and transfers. Only one place we can start. Gabriel Sara, no longer a Norwich City player. He's completed his move to Galatasaray for for a fee that is interpretable. But we believe that Norwich City are pretty confident that they're going to get north of 20 million for that. And to be honest, they wouldn't have done the deal if that wasn't going to be the case, I believe. What do you make of his departure? Inevitable, really, given the quality that we saw from him last season?
Well, I mean, you say inevitable. I mean, there was interest, wasn't there, from Premier League clubs? I mean, I was told this week, Leicester. But the figures they were talking were around about 11 million, which interest, but it's a la Johnny Rowan Leeds. It's not really interest, is it? If you can't get anywhere near a reasonable or a realistic starting point, then it doesn't go too far. But 2 in Serie A as well, by all accounts. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's a surprise. The speed of it moved on fairly acceleratedly, didn't it, back end of last week. And, you know, Galatasaray, fair enough, showed their hand. And then we know the timeline thereafter. You know, Gala officials flew in on Thursday, Friday. And, you know, he didn't feature against San Paoli. That was a clear signal. And then Johannes more or less confirmed it as a done deal. I think it was Sunday night when both clubs coordinatedly pushed the button, as it were. Yes, a lot of conjecture about the finances around it.
Is that
one or two pieces of I've seen on X? Yeah, but suffice to say, this 18 million euro that Galatasaray put out, because they're obviously obligated clubs in Turkey to put certain details in the public domain, that isn't the top and bottom of what Norwich are going to bank, clearly. You know, but how much is almost, you know, add-ons in terms of player and club performance, and also sell on as well, you know. And if he does well, then those figures are inflated. If not, then they'll be at a slightly reduced level. But so it's very hard, you know. The problem here is obviously the fact that, you know, that from the Turkish end, the figure has gone out there, which people have seized upon as, and we saw it Sunday night, the discourse, a lot of it was they've sold him on the cheap. What's Ben Napper doing, you know, ridiculous, giving him away almost. I mean, that clearly isn't the case. And anything you can observe about how Norwich are going about their business this summer is not naive in the slightest. You know, Jose Cordoba, they've brought him in for a way below market value. If you speak to, and as we did, you know, some of the data industry guys who believe that Norwich have stolen him from Bulgaria effectively, and that he is a Premier League player in the waiting. You know, Ben Krasny, you could say that deal, the way that's been put together. Callum Doyle, albeit alone, but again, very astute, very clever, you know, headed off rivals in all of these pursuits. And as we sit here, it looks like there's another young man who has a very interesting backstory in Amankwu Forzan, who could be, is expected to be a Norwich player by short order. And again, very astute piece of business. So if that is the case, and that's how Norwich have operated in this window, why would they give away Gabi Zara on the cheap? They haven't given him away on the cheap. You know, they've given him to a club who are now going to give him a stage, which potentially includes Champions League football, certainly competing at the right end in Turkey. And then who knows where that's a springboard to if he continues his trajectory. He was far too good for the Championship, probably far too good for Norwich at this point in the respective cycles. So it's about, can you drive a reasonable price? Of course, market forces. If there isn't, and it doesn't sound like there was other real serious bidders in the market for Gabby Zara, then of course you're a little bit tied in terms of your room for manoeuvre, but it still represents a pretty good deal, I think. How good, time will tell. And that will depend, as I say, on those factors, which at the moment nobody knows for sure how Gabby Zara will adjust to, you know, going from the Championship to the Champions League potentially. So good luck to him. Handled it in the right way. Very professional. I remember going back to the first pre-season game post-match, stood there on the touchline at Northampton, asked Johannes about him, and he had the captain's armband that day, and he just talked about the transfer situation and just said, look, he's an ultimate professional. He knows that that will take care of itself. He just needs to focus on his football. He did that, and all parties are now happy, and we move on. So, but putting that all to the side and going back to the very first part of this podcast, do Norwich's chances of getting out of the Championship improve without Gabby Zara? The answer is no. Because look at the 25 goal contributions in 46 league games last season. Massive question now is how do they, purely in the footballing dimension of this, how do they replace 25 goal contributions? Who's going to put their hand up? And obviously, you know, some of the answers lie within the current squad, some potentially outside of it between now and the end of the window. But I guess if you put it all together, you know, it was inevitable. The only debate was it this window or not? It has been this window. Good luck to him. A la Madison, you want him to go on now and fulfil his potential.
Yeah, indeed. And it's from the Championship to the Champions League, isn't it? So I think anyone maybe debating whether it's a step up is it's got the answer there. And the quality and size of a club like Galatasaray as well is maybe not up for debate. The quality of the league, sure, I think you could have that debate, but he's still going to be competing for league titles. And as any player, particularly one who has real ambitions of trying to break into the Brazilian national team, that is going to be something that he sees as a pathway and as a gateway to that. Just to sort of round off on the fee, I don't think we need to have a massive discussion about this again because we've written about it pretty endlessly. But as we said, Galatasaray and Turkish clubs more generally, because of stock exchanges and stuff like that, are sort of obligated to disclose initial fees, and that's the very basic figure. And you know, plus there's bonuses on top of that. Bonuses are a little bit more guaranteed than add-ons, so you're probably more likely to get a bonus. And the way sometimes these Turkish clubs can operate, not saying that's necessarily the case in this deal, but they have been known before to make sure that initial fee is quite low, and then to make sure you really stack bonuses. So obviously the figure that you publicly disclose is lower. So there we go. It will be north of 20 million, I think. Norwich's camp expect that, and Gabriel Sara's camp expect that as well. So that's probably all that there is to be said on the fee, really. Plus, as Paddy mapped out, there'll be sell on. Sao Paulo would have been due a little bit of a cut as well. So all of that comes into the equation. Sam, on Gabby Sara, and kind of had that discussion there, but is there an element of surprise to you that it was Turkey that he's ended up? And I think most people probably looked at him and felt there was a Premier League player in there from sort of stuff that I've gathered, that there were a few Premier League teams who maybe felt there was just a yard of pace or so short in terms of his game. Is there a little bit of a surprise that there isn't at least one Premier League club that's decided and looked at his season, his performances, his output last year and decided that he's worth a little bit of a gamble?
I think there is a little bit of a surprise for me there. I mean, obviously, you know, as Paddy mentioned, there has been a little bit of Premier League, well, you'd say interest, but in terms of the figures, it was nowhere near. There was interest from the Serie A as well. So clearly somebody who those clubs are aware of, but the discrepancy seems to be in the willingness to pay certain amounts for him. And to be honest, that is something I'm quite surprised by. I think you look at Kean and Dewsbury Hall and his move from Leicester to Chelsea. Yes, he had an excellent season and Leicester won the league. But in a sense, what Gabriel Sara did was more impressive because he had to almost drag a team that looked very average at times to a playoff spot. And he posted fantastic numbers within a team that I don't think anybody expected to really seriously be in the promotion mix and in the playoff semi-finals as they ended up being. So I am a little bit surprised by that. As you said, there is this slight worry among a lot of those Premier League clubs who were tracking him that physicality and that pace maybe was a little bit of a worry, and the athleticism was something that he might struggle with stepping up to the Premier League. And in that sense, you look at the way that some of those teams play in Turkey and the way that those games pan out, that does feel like the sort of league that he'll thrive in. But in terms of his own personal ambitions, as you mentioned, trying to get into that Brazil squad and playing for his nation is a really important thing for him. And I think going to Galatasaray, although you do have those maybe six games a season of Champions League football where you can really impress, and if you put in a fantastic performance, you know, there's no doubt those in Brazil are going to take notice of it. But I do feel it's a place where a lot of players go to, you know, you don't hear much about them. How much have we heard about Milo Rashica since he moved to Besiktas permanently? Not much, even though he has been a pretty decent player for them. And in that sense, I was a little bit surprised, but you have to remember it's not just about footballing reasons as well. You know, Sara is a person with a family. He'll be earning way, way more than he would at Norwich. He's got a fantastic financial opportunity that could probably set him up for life. He'll be living in Istanbul, which, yes, is probably quite a busy and hectic city for a new family, but is a place that a lot of people love and that a lot of people would love to live in. So I think there are a few aspects that contribute to that. And the Champions League one is definitely part of it. But I think one of the interesting elements of the Fortuna Makwa deal is that actually he's doing the opposite thing. And where a lot of people have spoken about Championships, Champions League, he's going from Champions League with RB Salzburg to Championship with Norwich City. So obviously we'll come on to him. But I don't think the Champions League is the be-all and end-all for every player. But we have to remember that, you know, they're individuals. Every individual is different. And there are non-footballing aspects that go into this as well that obviously Sara will benefit from significantly. So, yes, I am surprised that he's not going to a more mainstream league where we might see more of him. And I think for Norwich fans who just love to watch good footballers play, that is a little bit of a downside to him moving to Galatasaray. But I also can see why he's decided to make that move, and I do think it is a good one for him.
Just to read some of the names of his new teammates: Fernando Muslera, who's the goalkeeper; Davinson Sanchez; Mauro Icardi; Dries Mertens; Wilfried Zaha's there; Ziyech is there, obviously formerly of Chelsea; Lucas Torreira, who was Arsenal; Michy Batshuayi. So, I mean, it's not a bad squad that he's walking into, and that's just a snapshot as well of what is some really recognisable names over there, and they are the Turkish champions. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on. And we wish Gabby all the best of luck. Hopefully he can get his dogs out to Turkey in time as well, because I think my mum's a bit gutted. She's lost a customer this week because she groomed his dogs on multiple occasions. Paddy, you mentioned there about goal contributions and stripping Gabriel Sara's out of the team. Is there a prospect, whilst we're on the theme of outgoings, we'll get all the bad news out of the way early, is there a prospect that Norwich City, in a post-Gabriel Sara world, may also be looking at a post-Jonathan Rowe world in the coming days and weeks?
Well, not 7 million, Connor. Absolutely no chance of that. I don't think Leeds can go to the levels Norwich will be looking for, which is double that, I would imagine. Certainly 12 to 15 would be the bracket I'll be starting at. And that's purely because, you know, I've seen Farkas, we might have heard these sound bites before somewhere, they're paying for the sins of the past, apparently he said only a few days ago, in terms of, and we've seen that visibly, you know, Somerville departs, Archie Gray departs a bit earlier in the summer. There's a lot of FFP / PSR situation unfolding there at Leeds, and I simply don't think they can commit sums of money that get you up around those figures. They clearly do need to do some business, but I just don't see it. So for me, take Leeds only.
Interject. Do you think, from, because we know what that club is like, what that fan base is like, there's going to be an expectation, having sold Archie Gray, having sold Crescentio Somerville, there's going to be pressure on the ownership there to put their hands in the pocket, isn't there? Do you think there is an expectation that they do find that money to get to the levels that Norwich City will want, just in terms of that expectation and not appeasing the fan base, that's wrong, but maybe matching the ambition that the fan base has for that football club?
Well, I mean, time will tell, but why is Farke quite happy to go down that path? Is that not expectation management with the fan base that, you know, hang on, we're not getting
Is that expectation management for him, though, rather than the club, maybe?
Well, it's both.
I'm just playing devil's advocate, but...
Yeah, but I mean, it's both, isn't it? Yeah, it's like, don't expect me to turn water into wine, or, you know, because I won't have the resource. But by the same token, he's telling the fan base that that's going to be the case. And we will see, but I don't see, because that flies in the face of they're still, are they going to be complying with the financial parameters? We've seen West Brom's story around there in recent days, you know, how the EFL have now almost put them on a plan and limiting their room for manoeuvre. Leeds won't want to get themselves into that type of scenario. They've been there before as a club, not in terms of specifically football league compliance, but as a club who financially have found themselves on their uppers not all that far ago, pre-Bielsa, really. So it's an interesting one, but I just don't see it. And also as well, yes, Leeds may, if it comes together, and Farker clearly has a CV which tells you he can get a team out of the Championship, but there's absolutely no guarantee this time next summer Leeds are back in the Premier League. They're falling at the final hurdle last summer when they had a far superior squad, you know, clearly, than they have now. So it's not a given that John Rowe finds himself anywhere other than a sideways move, as big a club as Leeds are at this level particularly. So from his point of view, I'm not sure Leeds is necessarily a destination that would make him really actively pursue that. Clearly, you know, what I think will happen now is that because it had gone very quiet around him having started the summer, I think if we'd have all had to be put on the spot and pick one Norwich player likely out of that crown jewel cable, it would have been John Rowe, I think, because there was a lot of noise around him last January window, back end of last season. English produced homegrown player for Norwich with the numbers that he did, albeit in an injury interrupted season. So the fact that it had gone very quiet, I think what this episode now will achieve is that puts him back on the radar, you know, of potential Premier League suitors, maybe even further afield. And I think we'll see more noise around John Rowe between now and the end of this window. But I don't see, because of the financials, irrespective of what messaging Leeds are trying to achieve with their fan base or with Farker, how they can get to a level that Norwich would even reasonably entertain a conversation. From what we're led to believe, it was a fairly cursory discussion, that 7 million thing. So a bit like Adam Eder in that regard, clubs know what Norwich will at least open dialogue, sustained dialogue for on these players. And if a club wants to test their resolve, then it's for those clubs to come back to the table with something a bit more realistic than 7 million. I mean, that's ridiculous, really. 7 million for John Rowe. I just don't see it. Even with his contractual situation, which as we stand here is 1 year plus an option. To me, and I think I mentioned it on the Q&A on Monday, 7 million would be sort of where we'd be next summer when he's effectively, maybe say Norwich, a la Cantwell, activated that 1 year clause, and he's literally 12 months out. Then you're getting probably to the levels of 7 million, but not this summer, next summer maybe. So, you know, we'll see. But for me, it doesn't immediately scream that's a deal that's going to get done. Certainly not for that figure.
Okay, I'm going to get you both to put 50p down. Does he, just in a word, stay or go, Paddy, John Rowe?
I can see both scenarios. I really can, because it had gone very quiet around him. I mean, what you're talking about is, are there, between now and the end of the window, are there going to be Premier League clubs? Because Palace, hypothetically, were a club at the start of summer, but they've filled those wide player slots. Is there going to be a club who lose a player and the domino effect kicks in? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say he's going to stay.
It's a bit more than one word, but we got there in the end. I'm going to say go for what it's worth. Sam?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you and say go. Probably not to Leeds, though. I sort of agree with Paddy's reasoning on the Leeds situation.
Yeah, I wonder if we're in a similar place to where we were with Max Aarons, where it just feels like maybe clubs are waiting to learn the numbers, and then we might see a few more spring into action. Let's see what happens on that. Let's get to incomings though, because there has been one officially and one which might be official by the time this podcast is out. We'll wait and see on that. But Callum Doyle, Sam, we've been speaking about him all summer long. Norwich have had to be patient. Ben Napper spoke about the quality of being patient and how that's probably paid off. Again, we've spoken about him a lot, but a really interesting signing for what they want to do. Feels like a really important signing and probably a really positive signing as well.
Yeah, I think it ticks so many boxes when you look at both the past and what he's achieved previously, what what Norwich need, the sort of transformation they're trying to put into their squad, the financial situation that they find themselves in. I think really this is probably the best fit Norwich could find for what they want, really. He ticks both that centre-back and left-back box. It was interesting how open he was in his first club interview about the fact that Ben Napper and Johannes Hoftorp see him playing in both roles at different points in this season. And I think that that covers off a really important element, because not only at left-back were they obviously seriously lacking at the start of the summer, but they've now got Ben Crezene, who only really has, I think, 13 championship appearances off the top of my head in his career. Yes, he looks like a significant talent, and he's been viewed as a significant talent for most of his career. But right now, he is a bit raw, and he does probably need to learn. So to have somebody with who still fits that age bracket, is still only 20, still the sort of young player that Napa wants to see in that squad, but has more than 100 EFL appearances under his belt, is a really good thing at left back, and probably will help Crezene in that journey and that long-term journey for Norwich, even if obviously they'll have to send Doyle back to Manchester City at the end of this season. And then at centre-back, I mean, you can see already in the sort of opening day debate what impact he could have there, because although we'll get an update later from Torup on the Jose Cordoba situation and how he's recovering from that that groin issue that he's had, if he's not available for the Oxford game, then immediately you have no left-footed centre-backs to choose from. You're having to automatically cobble together a defence that probably isn't perfect and probably isn't what Torup would have liked to see going into the first game of the season. And Doyle gives them that option. Somebody who's played centre-back for plenty of his career, is left-footed, so has that natural those natural passing lanes, and really helps them cover off those two positions. And as long as he can avoid the sort of injury that impacted his Leicester spell last season, that could be a really, really helpful asset. Also, you listen to everyone speak about him that's seen him play, all of his former coaches, you know, sort of people who've watched him play for Leicester and Coventry in the last couple of years. Everyone talks about what a fantastic technical footballer he is. And those are exactly the sort of footballers that Torup wants to see in his system, and the sort of footballers that should thrive in a possession-based, more attacking system. So he seems to fit really well in that sense. The only concern appears to be sort of his pace, which was an issue for Enzo Maresca at Leicester last season. He actually highlighted it after the Norwich game, and I remember being sat in that press conference and thinking Maresca was being surprisingly honest about the lack of pace in his defence. But as he outlined at that time, if you want to play a high line and you want to press high, as Torup does, you want defenders who have the pace to then leave a bit of space in behind them and to be able to recover. And for Doyle, that looks like it might be a little bit of an issue, but there's always the option to cover it off. And they do have other defenders with a bit more pace in that squad. So, I think overall it looks like a really positive signing, a bit of a coup for me. And a lot of people are surprised he hasn't managed to land a Premier League move for this season. But I think that speaks volumes as to the quality of this deal, and fair play to Ben Napper and the rest of the Norwich City recruitment department for being a bit patient, because I know a lot of people were getting quite twitchy, but they were always hopeful of securing a deal. As soon as Manchester City got back from that US tour, they were on it, they made it happen. And although obviously the proof is always in the pudding, and this can always end up looking disastrous in a couple of months, on paper it looks like a really positive signing, yeah.
Indeed, I think is a nice pattern developing as well in terms of their recruitment and age profiles and contractual levels that they're going to at the moment. It's some nice sort of squad building signings as well, and probably leads us on nicely to, and this is the first time I'm going to say it out loud, so this is going to be fun, and he will be after this point known as simply Forsen. Forsen Amankwa is what I'm going with. I don't know if any of you lads have got any advance on that, but that seems to be where we're at with it. I'm yet to know if it's Forsen Amankwa or Amankwa Forsen, but we'll learn hopefully in good time. Paddy, he is seemingly on his way to Norwich City. Fee just under £4 million from what we're led to believe, plus obviously bonuses and whatnot on top of that. It's quite an investment, isn't it, for Norwich City at this stage of where they are. We know the financial situation which Norwich have been all summer, and we've spoken about it pretty liberally. Obviously, the Sarah deal has freed them up. May potentially be some ability to, I guess, probably lean upon some money that they hope to receive for other players. We mentioned John Rowe, and I'm sure there'll be some other trim bits around the edges. This seems to have really excited the Norwich fans. Can you understand why, given his profile, his pedigree, maybe even the type of player that he is, as to why it seems to have caught the imagination of Norwich fans? And equally, what is it about left-footers? Because I think he's left-footed, and that would make it their fourth left-footed signing of the summer. So I don't know if that's a new recruitment angle that they're going down.
Well, they used to say that they were quite a precious commodity. I remember Ben Gibson, he was almost wrapping him in cotton wool because he's the only one with a left foot. But that is an interesting element. Clearly, from what we know already about Torup and Riddersholm and Napa, you know, that's not a coincidence. They maybe identified an imbalance in terms of, you know, players' natural foot in terms of the squad, and have sought to correct that if this guy gets over the line, which by all accounts, I mean, we're recording this on Thursday lunchtime. In theory, by tomorrow, that should be done, confirmed. There's a bit of debate whether he'd be available for Oxford. That'll probably depend on everything from the sort of the league paperwork to, I guess, where we are with the GP. I've asked the question and didn't get a definitive answer on that this morning.
From memory, league-wise, for a 3 o'clock kickoff, it had to be done by midday by the Friday. But obviously, we're talking about 12:30 kickoff, so I don't know if that brings the deadline a little bit closer in or how that works. But that's said, you know, you're talking about GBEs and stuff as well, which takes even more time.
Exactly. Yeah. So maybe it might come too soon for this weekend, but all the signals would suggest that is a deal that's going to get done. And why excitement? Well, I guess, I mean, I don't want to talk for Norwich fans, but, you know, much has been made of that area of the pitch over successive head coaches, really. You know, they haven't had the type of player, the profile of player to, as he seems to have been packaged, a box-to-box, real dynamic, lots of elements of that midfield game as well. He doesn't seem to have too many deficiencies. For me, and we'll have to get to the bottom of it. I don't know why. I mean, he signed a new deal in October of last year. He's playing for a club in European grade competition. He played 23, 24 times in the Austrian top flight last season for a team who finished second. Why is star has fallen with Salzburg? Why did they give a player a new deal just before Christmas, and now a matter of 8-9 months later they deem him surplus to requirements? So there's clearly something. My antennae immediately thinks there's something not quite right there. And
it was quite interesting, I think, when this broke, and obviously, you know, we were speaking to people at our end, and it was almost initially kind of suggest, it might be a loan to, you know, to buy sort of deal. That was initially the sort of structure that was being spoken about, and then obviously a bit more clarity in terms of the fee and whatnot. So that is a really interesting point, isn't it? Because like you say, he's played in the Champions League. I think he played twice against Inter Milan last season. So this isn't a player who's been on the fringes. This is somebody who
made his senior debut for Ghana as well this summer. You know, it something doesn't ring quite true there, and whether it's just I'm not. Dug in enough to the Salzburg end, if there's been changes in coaches or personnel, technical director, sport director, and there's been some sort of, you know, because I noticed towards the back end of last season, he wasn't playing as much. He wasn't getting as many minutes. He hasn't been involved this season because their season's already kicked off. So something clearly has gone awry as to why seemingly a player really coming through at that club, getting talked about in very high grade terms, is now, with the greatest respect, about to pitch up at Norwich in the Championship. So time will tell, but it would seem that, you know, the Ghanaian connection, I mean, Torup obviously would know all about that area, that territory, the ability of the footballers because of the interlinked connection with Nordjylland and Tom Vernon and the Right to Dream Academy and how they pull players from Ghana. But of course, immediately my mind goes to who was his assistant at Nordjylland, Michael Essien. I'm pretty sure he would have been a recommending sound at board. And if he's good enough for Michael Essien, then I can't wait to see him in a Norwich shirt. But something, I don't know, something at the back of my head. Why is a player they offer a new deal in October now deemed surplus to requirements? So we'll maybe have to dig into that a little bit more.
Yeah, it was Michael Essien, wasn't it, who scored that goal with the outside of his boot that curled so far wide. There were like Chelsea fans behind the goal who ducked, and then it went into the back of the net. I don't think I'm imagining that, but that is one of my favourite goals, I think, of anyone. So yeah, if he's got Essien's recommendation, then that's great. I think that's it on transfers. Shout out you boys if I've missed anything, but I think we've ran through that pretty nicely. So that probably leans us into the second instalment of the show, which is this chat with Ed Cousins-Lake that we had. He's releasing a new Norwich City book. I think it will appeal to lots of you. And here he is to tell us all about it.
For this next section of the podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by a Norwich City fan, an author, and I'm sure name familiar to many listeners and watchers out there, Ed Cousins-Lake. Ed, brilliant to see you. Thank you so much for giving us your time on what is this Friday afternoon that we're recording this.
Yeah, pleasure.
You've got a new book out, so I'm going to hand it over to you. Tell us a little bit about it.
It just so happens, I have my copies here. It's the second volume of the quiz book. The first one came out, several years ago now. The History Press told me it was their biggest seller of that genre. So thank you, Norwich fans. Could I possibly do another one? So lots more questions later. Here we are, volume two.
Yeah, and you've obviously done a lot of books and a lot of Norwich City books as well. So how nice is it that you get to combine those two things? Obviously, your work as an author and your love of Norwich City. It must be really nice that you're able to combine them and that people out there obviously want to read them in their thousands and as they obviously have done throughout, you know, your various books.
Yeah, to be honest, I thought I was probably done with Norwich books. I've done quite a few. I didn't want to not do the quiz book when they asked me to do it, and it just so happens there's a possibility of another one now coming up on the rails, so there may be another one, but I'm an author and writer in a general sense, so I love the football club, I love writing about them, but there's lots of other things I want to do as well and have done, but I can't stay away from it. You know, I'm like a salmon, I have to keep returning to Carrow Road for another literary fix of Norwich, and as I say, there's possibly something coming up, but I'll let people know about that in due course.
Excellent. Yeah, please do. Well, tell us about this latest quiz book then. How do you go about putting it all together, and what makes this one perhaps slightly different to the first edition?
It's quite logistically difficult to do because it's 30 chapters. There's 11 questions in each. So in the first book, there were 330 questions. So I now have to find another 330 questions. Make sure they're not duplicated from the first book. Make sure the answers are right, because people will jump on me from a great height if they're not, and go from there. And of course, as you're writing the book, things may change. Mm. Yeah, and things did change at Norwich during the time the book was being written. So I did have to change certain things. So it's difficult. It's a little book, but there's a lot of work involved and a lot of research, and it's good fun. I love doing it. You know, if they say do another one, I'll happily do it.
And you spoke a little bit about the process there, and it's only as you speak, I think, that most people will be aware how difficult it is, particularly a quiz book, to put together. So how long was the process in total from actually, you know, being asked to write a second one to being sat here today with obviously having copies in your hand? How long has that process been?
Oh, easily 9 months. It was last autumn, I think, they got in touch and said, can you do another one? And I started pretty much straight away. And I never like to spend weeks and weeks and weeks on one book because you get a bit stale. So I did have enough time in the end, finished well before deadline. But it does take time because you are constantly thinking for an original question. And the difference with this one, of course, is that I did ask some Norwich fans to contribute their own questions. So there were 11 I didn't have to think of.
Which is always
you came to one, didn't you?
I think I did. Off the top of my head, you definitely asked me. It's going to be. I mean, without going into obviously the depths, because people will have to buy it and read it if they want to know the questions. Can you give us some sort of themes of questions? Is that how you've worked? Are they themes, or are they a bit?
Yeah, each chapter has a theme. So we've got. Let's have a look. It's a good job I got this here, really.
Yeah, it is. Yes, handy prop.
We've got one about managers. There's a chapter about the 1980-81 season, about the strips, club firsts, caretaker managers, the 1960s, League One memories from back in 2009-10, record transfers, all sorts. And some for everybody, you know, there'll be parts that, you know, younger fans can answer, and some for the older ones like me, that like the 60s, they'll be able to answer those.
Well, I was thinking as you were speaking there, actually, my dad would be much more interested in probably the 80s stuff, and I'd probably be more interested in that League One section that you've done. So you have catered for all sort of generations, yeah, of Norwich City fans.
Definitely. You know, even going back to questions about the 1950s FA Cup run, which is, you know, well before my time, but, you know, there are people out there who still talk very fondly about it, and it can't be neglected. You know, we're very focused with Norwich on the recent history of the club, and rightly so, but it's rich, you know, it goes right back to the 50s and before then. And one of my roles, as I see it, as an author, is to talk about the club as a whole, and not just from the Premier League onwards, or not just in the last 10 years, or not just when Stuart Webber has been at the club. You know, it's a big history, and I like to highlight all of it.
Finally then, Ed, obviously we started by speaking about your book, so let's finish with a bit of a plug. There'll be plenty of Norwich City fans listening, watching, wondering where they can get hold of it. Where is the best place for them to buy your book?
Well, certainly all the good bookshops in Norwich will stock it. Jarrell's will have it. Waterstones, it's available online. Very easy to get. History Press do distribute their books very well, so you won't have to try too hard. If people really genuinely have a problem getting hold of it, give me a shout. I'll point them in the right direction.
Yeah, well, Ed, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for another Norwich City book as well. It's most appreciated by all of us, and I know I'm certainly looking forward to having a look and trying to answer as many of the questions as I can.
Yeah,
so,
take them on the road trip, Sir Paddy.
Yeah, we will do. It'll definitely make a decent bit of entertainment for us as we try and pass hours on the way to away games. So, yeah, thank you very much, Ed.
Pleasure. Thank you, Connor.
That was Ed Cousins-Lake. Really looking forward to reading a copy on that book. And yeah, I think that some of those quiz questions are going to keep us entertained on the road in the Championship this season. He's very kindly going to send us a couple of copies as well. So that will be a good way to pass the time, particularly in that insane month that we've got in 25, which is like Plymouth and Burnley and Middlesbrough all in the same month away from home. So that's going to help us eat away the miles. So yeah, looking forward to reading that. So that now we go on to the serious stuff, gents. This is predictions time. Now, I think from memory, and I am doing this from memory, you boys probably might remember where you put Norwich last season. But I think, Paddy, you got it bang on, didn't you? Did you say sixth last season from memory?
Well, I don't want to say I only said, I gave it a broad range of 6 to 10.
Right.
I said optimistically, let's go sixth. So, yeah, you can find that clip if you so wish. I wouldn't possibly pick that out. But yeah, I definitely. Whereas I think Sam would have been a bit lower down the table.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
Which, and I also said Christian Fastnacht was going to be Norwich City's biggest player of the season. So,
but apart from that, you got it bang on. So yeah, exactly. with that, I think I went ninth. So I think I was probably in the middle of you both. But I'm claiming that as a semi win because that was what, three places out. So I don't think that's too bad as predictions go. So with that in mind, we're gonna whistle for a few things. So what we're gonna do here, and I'm saying this to give the boys some filler. So we're gonna we'll probably end with a prediction, but we're going to go with top Championship top two. We're going to go with the three to get relegated. I've not decided if we're going to do a top six yet, but maybe. Depends on time. But definitely top two, definitely bottom three. Then we are going to go in terms of Norwich City. Then we'll probably go where Norwich City are going to finish. We'll go who's going to win the Player of the Season award. We're going to go for Breakout Star. We did that last year as well. And then we are going to end with just a prediction for anything that can happen at any point during the season. And the boys can be as creative or not as they want with that prediction. So, Sam, let's start with you. Your Championship top two. Who are you going for to be automatically promoted from the Championship this year?
I'm going to say Leeds and Burnley. Leeds, for me, was the obvious one. And although we sort of talked about some of the struggles that they've had earlier, some of the key players that they've had to sell, maybe the financial situation they find themselves in a little bit, I just think it's a much weaker Championship this season. You look at how dominant those four teams were, and it just makes sense that that the one that didn't go up out of those four will win the title this season. I think that's actually what happened in 2020, basically, was they just about narrowly missed out on promotion in a really tight promotion race, then went and won the league quite comfortably. the next season. So I could see that happening. And then from there, it was actually quite difficult to pick a second choice. I kind of looked along the table at everyone apart from Leeds, and I sort of went, no, not you, not you, not you, all the way to the bottom. And I was like, I've still got to pick someone. And I just think, I don't know, Burnley did the best in the Premier League out of the relegated three. They probably have clung on to a couple of those pretty good players that helped them get out of the division the last time. And although Scott Parker has had some struggles in recent years since leaving Bournemouth, he has proven before that he can get teams out of this division. So I'll say him, but I'm much more confident of the Leeds one. And I think Burnley won't find it easy, even if they do end up getting promoted.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've gone for the same two. I'm a little bit of a romantic when it comes to Scott Parker, because when I grew up, very odd, but he was like the player that I tried to base myself on. I just loved the way that he played the game. And others like Xavi and Iniesta, but Scott Parker was a little bit closer to home, and he did once play for Norwich, so I'm a little bit blinded by that. But equally, I think it's been quite interesting to see how he's not been written off. That's unfair, but there's been some interesting narratives forming around him. I actually think Fulham might accept. I don't think that was the best job in terms of getting them up via the playoffs. They beat Brentford, didn't they, in Wembley. It wasn't massively convincing. But the Bournemouth job, I thought, was better. You look at what he did there and some of the players that he had and some of the improvement that he oversaw. And I think that was a better job. And I just think Leeds are probably the strongest team. And I think the three coming down, unlike last year, are probably significant. Maybe not significantly, but weaker than they are at the moment. So that's my reasoning. Paddy, I've got a feeling this is going to be an interesting one for you. Who's in your Championship top two?
Well, I mean, again, I think I've done enough of these. I'm just going to shake it up and throw it out there. And I mean, Luton of the three, I've under Rob Edwards, I think they'll be there or thereabouts. But it's a bit boring to throw Luton and Burnley, sorry boys, and Sheffield United in there. So I'm just going to take them out. They don't even exist. And I'm going to go Leeds because if Farker doesn't get it right this season, he's out of a job. So it's win or bust in that regard. And the other one's a heart one. Kov, I think, will finally crack it. They were in the top. I mean, funny enough, Callum Dore, he was an absolute standout in the team two seasons ago that got to the playoff final, lost to Luton on a penalty kick. I think it was 12-11, I think, on penalties. So, wafer-thin margin between them being in the Premier League and not. Last season, they just fell short. But, of course, I think mainly due to their FA Cup run, and they should have knocked out United in the semi-final. We all know what happened in that game with VAR and what have you. So I think that was, in the end, too much of a distraction, but they've done some good business. I like the lad they've got from West Brom, Thomas Asante. I think he will score goals, had you right. He's a good player. They've got some excellent midfielders for this level, Shee from Thorpe. Binks as well, who, you know, Norwich reportedly had a look at as well, the centre-back. They've got him back from Serie A, I think. So, you know, and obviously it's my club, so I follow them quite closely. They've made some astute decisions around Mark Robbins and his sort of coaching setup. You know, they brought back a former player in George Boateng, very popular player back in the day in the Gordon Strachan era. They've shaken it up as well in terms of there's a performance director gone in there. I think he was involved heavily with the British Olympic Association. They've got the Norwich fan, formerly Doug King, driving it forward now. He's the figurehead now. So it feels like off the pitch, they're getting a lot right. And as I say, you know, they're the club, really, I look at putting my allegiance to one side. But they've been knocking on the door the last few years. And at some point, you would feel they have has to come together. You know, the fan base is sufficient that if they start rolling, then they will get behind them. And it can be a very difficult place to go, albeit Norwich tends to have a lot of success there. But So yeah, Leeds and Cov.
Interesting. Okay, very quickly, because we are going to be pressed for time, I think, in terms of this. I'll just rattle through the other teams that I think are going to make up the top six. I've got Cov in there, actually. I think like you, I think they're going to be good this year. Borough, I think, this is in no particular order, by the way. Borough, I think, are going to be very good, and then Luton, and I'm going to go with Sheffield United for the last spot. So that those make up my playoff spots. And if I had to pick one to go up, I'll go with you and say Cov, because likewise, I think their central midfield pairing that you've mapped out is probably one of, if not the best in the division. And I think they've added a bit more firepower this year with Thomas Asante. So yeah, Sam, your four, and then just very quickly, one that you think will go up via the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think you're far wrong with that, really. I can see Sheffield United being in there, Luton as well. Bristol City, I've seen a lot of people being quite optimistic about their chances, and I think Liam Manning is a very decent coach who was clearly making signs of progress with them last season. So I think they might just push into it, and although I don't think they'll get promoted, I think they might get into that top six. And then, I'll throw Cov in there as well, because they have consistently been in and around it. As Pad said, I think they've made a couple of decent additions this summer and held on to their best players, apart from obviously Callum O'Hare. I think they'll be in and around it. So if I have to say one, I'll go for Cov as well. Why not? We're all Cov.
Paddy, you're four to make up the playoffs, and who do you think's gonna get out of that?
Well, I mean, having said I was ignoring the three who came down for the top two, I'm going to throw them all in. Luton, Sheffield United, Burnley, and I'm going to throw Borough in. Yeah, I like some of the things Borough are doing now. Had a bit of a misstep last season, but the season before, it was Cov knocked them out in the playoffs, actually. But I think getting right top end of the pitch, they'll be there or thereabouts. But I think Luton, maybe, because I like Edwards, I like what he's about. I think they could just, bit like Norwich, come down, but keep it on an even keel, nice and stable on and off the pitch, and they'll be there or thereabouts. And if they are, then they know what it takes to get back out again.
Yeah, agreed. Good stuff. Relegation trio. Again, I think we can whittle through this pretty quickly. I've gone for Oxford United. Just think that this step up is going to be very, very difficult. Derby. I don't actually mind their squad. And I'm sorry to say this, because I love Paul Warne as a human being. I worry about his style of play and the transferability to that, to the Championship. And I've gone Watford as well, who I'm very, very worried about. Just the state of that football club at the moment in terms of their ownership. Don't think that Tom Cleverley did enough really in his interim spell to suggest that there's massive signs that he will be successful as a full-time manager. We know how impatient they are as well with coaches. So I think the general instability around that is going to prove costly. And we know that obviously clubs who are in bad states off the pitch, that tends to translate on the pitch. So those are my three: Oxford, Derby and Watford. Honourable mentions. I think Blackburn could be in trouble as well if they, as everyone probably expects them to sell Sammy Schmoddocks from here. I think that could be really difficult for them. Plymouth as well, obviously. It's going to be interesting to see how the Wayne Rooney experiment goes. But yeah, Oxford, Derby and Watford are my three. Sam, who's your three?
Oxford and Plymouth are the nailed on ones for me, just because I mean, the Plymouth situation is a pretty clear one for me. They were the only team in and around that relegation battle last season that haven't improved on their coach and haven't seemed to make good strides towards safety this season. Oxford, I think, will struggle to adapt to the Championship, and probably the squad isn't quite up to where it needs to be to stay in that, in the league. And then the other one I was sort of struggling with, I think there are a few sort of outside shouts that might just be dragged in. And I went for Sunderland in the predictions for the paper. Ooh. But I'm not 100%
I think that's bold.
I just feel they've been in decline for a long while. Their new head coach doesn't really seem to have proven himself much in his career. There seems to be quite a lot of doubt around that. Haven't made too many especially good additions this summer, and although I know it's an outside shot and I won't be surprised if they defy me, I think there's always going to be one that you don't expect to be in there. And I think Sunderland have almost as good a chance as any. I think Watford is actually a pretty good shout, but I don't want to sell out and just copy you and go for that. So I'll stick to my guns and say Sunderland as well. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I think with Sunderland, a lot of it is going to depend on how good Reggie Labrie is, which none of us really know at this stage. He could be an absolute world beater. His career, and as you say, CV certainly doesn't suggest that, but we'll see how it goes. Paddy, who have you got in the bottom three who are going down?
Yeah, there's no other new names I would throw into the mix. I've got Plymouth, Derby and Oxford, although I do like his Buckingham, he's got something about him, I think. Quite an interesting story. We'll get a close-up view of him on Saturday, obviously. But I'll stick with those three, I think.
Good stuff. Right, let's move on to Norwich specifically, which people will be pleased to hear. They haven't featured in any of our top six, and they haven't featured in any of our bottom threes as well. I think, obviously, we put some of these out in advance in the paper, and I've had an email that's moaned that I'm too positive and also too negative. So people can make their own minds up. Where do we think? Actually, we'll save league position till last, actually, because I think that's the one that's going to be most interesting. So let's start with player of the season. Sam, who do you think is going to be lifting the Barry Butler Memorial Trophy come May?
I'm glad you've come to me first, because I think this is going to be a fairly common opinion, and I get to look original with it. So I'm going to say Borja Sainz, who I think is in waiting to become one of those new heroes that I think Norwich need after selling Gabriel Sara. Maybe they'll sell John Rowe, and I think that's one benefit of being a selling club, is that you get to see these new players come through. And I thought Sainz adapted to English football pretty well last season. You have to remember that he started it with injury and then a really slow bedding in process that, you know, it seems to have got lost a bit over time. But I remember how frustrated fans were with how long it was taking David Wagner to bed him in. So really, he's only had a few months of getting used to English football, and he already looks like he's very used to it, and he's capable of being a pretty effective player. So I'm going to say he's going to step up and claim Norwich City's Player of the Season award for this season.
I think that would be a popular answer amongst Norwich fans. Paddy?
I was going to say Sainz, but I'm now going to say Cordoba.
Nice.
Because if he comes in and can translate, that's the key. As I said, I mean, we said right at the start, by all accounts, this is a player who isn't championship grade. He's the one above, and how high, who knows? So if he's got that raw material, we know how good Torrop is in terms of a coach and working with players on the training pitches. If he can just adapt, and we know he speaks perfect English, so that element isn't going to be an issue. But if he can adapt to the grueling nature that is the championship, you look at him physically as an athlete, you know, this pace. We saw a little, albeit it was a very small cameo against Magdeburg, but it was one instance he ran back and there was only one winner between him and the striker. So, again, we've not seen too much of him on the ball, but by all accounts, technically he can handle that as well. 23, I mean, there's so much potential in that player. If he can come in and adapt seamlessly, you know, he is Norwich's new defensive leader in waiting.
Yeah, and could be a real asset as well. Left-sided centre-backs, we know how much of a rare commodity they are. If you can get one right and get one playing well, there's going to be a lot of interest in him fairly quickly. I could see that happening. It's going to be a good year for the Spanish speakers, because I've gone for Marcelino Nunez. So I think if he can, and look, it feels like, and first and foremost, with the caveat that if he stays, because he's one that has been linked with a move away, I think if firstly he stays in a possession-based system, if he can replicate what he did in the second half of last season, where I felt he was one of Norwich City's strongest performers, feels like it should be a system that gets the best out of him in terms of his passing range and his ability. Feel like for him as well, this needs to be the year really that he steps forward. So I'm going to back him to do that. And I think he could be a really important member of Norwich City's team. So yeah, we've gone for a good year for the Spanish speakers. Let's go for young players. Now, I only remember what I said last year in terms of this. So a breakthrough star, if you want to label it like that. I went for Kellen Fisher last year, which I don't think was the worst shout in the world. I can't remember who you boys went for, so maybe you can say
did
that.
Did we frame it quite slightly differently? Did we do like an underrated big player or something? Because I seem to remember saying Yiannoulis, who obviously wasn't like a young breakthrough player.
Right.
So I think we might have framed it slightly differently.
Okay, well, we've revised the category then. That will explain why I couldn't quite work out who you guys have gone for, but that makes sense. So on the theme of youth and young players and bold new eras, we're going to go for that. So Paddy, I'm going to come to you first. Who's going to be the breakout star of Norwich City's 24-25 campaign?
Sorry, Connor, what age does constitute young player? Now you've created this category.
I will accept anything from 23 down, under 23. I think that's fair.
Oh, let's go the other end of the scale. I mean, we saw a lot of him in pre-season. Young man, Scottish midfielder, Gabe Forsyth. Now, breakout with a lowercase b. I'm not sitting here trying to say that he will play 45 championship games and he'll be starting and he'll be the captain by the end of the season and he'll be off to Real Madrid a la Bellingham. We're not, don't want to shovel that on him, but if we're talking about a player who might be in and around the first team squad, maybe in the early part of the season, and then start to come through, get a few minutes off the bench, and then who knows, second half of the season, if he grasped it, looks as comfortable as he has done in pre-season in and around senior players, then breakout, for me, that would constitute a breakout. It might not necessarily mean he's played a lot of minutes and he's now a first name on the team sheet guy, but that would be some meteoric rise if he's gone from essentially being, you know, a staple in the development setup to a fully fledged first team player at 17, 18. So, yeah, let's go bold. It's all about optimism, isn't it? Game 4-5.
Yeah, I like that answer. Sam?
I was stuck between two of them, Kellen Fisher and Brad Hills. But given Kellen Fisher, I think everyone sort of knows his qualities, and maybe it isn't as interesting a shout as it might have been this time a year ago, when, fair play to you, Connor, you made the shout. I'm going to go Hills, because although there has been a lot of talk about him already, I think he's in a pretty decent position to make that breakthrough. And at the moment, obviously, you've still got him and Jaden Warner in and around the first team group. You've got a lot of centre-backs sort of around that, those under-21s. So I could be proven disastrously wrong in the space of about 3 weeks if he goes out on loan. But I think that centre-back area is sort of for the taking at the moment. It feels like it's a little bit in flux. And he has looked pretty good in pre-season. And I feel like part of this discussion is what a breakthrough really means. And for me, if he can start 15, 20 championship games, that for me is actually a pretty good achievement for somebody who's playing in League Two last season. I've seen a few people saying that it's almost, it shows a lack of trust in youth if he doesn't end up starting every week. And he hasn't ever played in the championship before. The best level he's ever played at is League Two, where Accrington, who he was on loan with, ended up finishing mid-table. So I actually think if he ends up starting a decent number of games, maybe being a third or fourth choice, that's a pretty good example of a youth pathway for me. So yeah, I'll say Hills, just because of the way that centre-back dynamic looks set right now. What about you, Connor?
Yeah, see, I was going to go for Hills, but I think he's going to go on loan. So that's sort of swayed me. So what I've actually ended up doing is doubling down, and I'm going to go for Kellen Fisher for the second year running. And like you say, this depends how you define breakthrough. So I'll be a bit bolder and I'll say I think he could be Norwich's starting right back by the end of the season. That's sort of what I would define maybe as a breakthrough for Kellen Fisher. So yeah, and obviously he's played in other positions as well. We've even seen him as a midfielder, so who knows, you can't rule anything out. Let's before we go to the big one in terms of league position prediction, let's go with the final category. As I said, you can be as creative or otherwise as you like. This is just a general prediction for something that at some stage is going to happen during the season. So, Sam, let's start with you. What is your we need to think of a name for it, but what is your prediction in this particular category?
I'm going to go with one related to my player of the season pick, and I'm going to say Borja Sainz scores a curler from left to right at least 5 times in the season. I actually can't think of any goals he scored for Norwich that haven't panned out in almost exactly the same way. So for me, as long as he doesn't suffer any serious injuries, that's almost as surefire a prediction as any in what could be a fairly unpredictable and interesting season for Norwich City.
No, I like that. I'm sure there'll be listeners who will be with their tally charts writing that down and ready to watch for them. I'd love to know what the odds are on that. Paddy, what's your prediction? Can be as loose as anything, something that's going to happen at this stage or at any stage during the upcoming season.
What a remit. That's a very vast remit. Norwich will be the top scorers in the division. There you go.
Ooh, like that. What's your reasoning?
Based on... We now have a head coach in charge who is completely committed to A, possession-based football, but B, chance creation. And Sam's touched on it. You've got players like Science, you've got players like Sargent, hopefully. Eden, maybe not, but one or two other good attacking, aggressive players. They're going to commit men to the box week in, week out. And Maybe it's also a nod to maybe the defensive strength of the championship isn't probably where it was at. So I think, they won't have to be particularly razor sharp to score a lot of goals in this league. But yeah, if Torup is all about, you know, entertainment and getting bums off seats, then that surely translates into a lot of chances. And if they take their fair proportion, then I should have checked this before I even came out with this. I don't know where they ranked in terms of goal scoring last season under Wagner, but I think they were probably in the top seven goal scorers collectively. So I might be completely wrong, but you know, on the basis they finished sixth, they did score a lot of goals, it felt like, in certain parts of the season. So, you know, if you're going from that under to Wagner, it's not a great leap to the Torup to be the standout goal scorers in the division. So that's my prediction.
No, it isn't. I'm trying to find out. But I mean, basically what you're saying there is 100 points and 100 goals. That's basically what...
You've put words into my mouth. I mean, what I left unsaid there is that they might concede quite a few as well. Certainly, yeah. Pre-season. So, unfortunately, that one might cancel out the other. But I just think in terms of scoring goals, I think we're going to see plenty.
I was going to say, having seen your league table prediction for the paper, they're going to have to concede an astronomical number of goals if they're scoring the most in the division to end up where they are.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. I'm still trying to look at where they finished in terms of goals last season. But I remember they surpassed the... amount that they'd scored the previous year pretty early, hadn't they? Here we go. I will tell you, they finished fifth most goals in the championship last year with 79. Ipswich got 92. So it's not far off 100 goals that they might have to achieve. So yeah, that's an interesting one. Bold shout, I like it. I am going to go, this is a little bit different, but I think at some stage, and this could be amongst the fact, we might even have it on this podcast, to be fair, but amongst the fan base, amongst like national pundits, we know there's going to be more games on television this year. They are going to be labelled as naive. Someone's going to say you can't play this style of football in the championship. To be fair, we've already had a little bit of, they don't have the players to play that style. And I think that one's probably more legitimate. But somebody, and I don't want to name it, but I feel like I probably should because I've got a very specific person in mind for this. So hopefully he'll prove me wrong. But I've just got an image in my head of Don Goodman on Sky Sports saying the words Norwich are naive at some stage. So that is my out there prediction. Might not be Don, and I have met Don. He's a very nice chap. So it might not be him, but that's just a vision I have on my head. So that's my out there prediction for this season. And we'll see if that comes up at some stage. Right then, let's go. And I think we're all, interestingly, if we stick to the ones that we put in print anyway, it might have changed in the last day or so. We're all in a very similar ballpark in terms of Norwich City predictions. So, Paddy, let's start with you. Where are Norwich City going to finish in the championship table, bearing in mind they're going to score the most goals?
Well, yeah, but if they concede a good few, then they'll probably hover around mid-table. So I'm going to say 12th. And the caveat there is that, you know, And things are moving as we're recording this in terms of potential more incomings. We don't know what the squad looks like until August the 30th. So it is a leap of faith, whatever prediction we come out with, let's be honest, because we don't know what Thorup's going to have to work with. But that aside, I think on the evidence of what we've seen in pre-season, this whole shift in mentality in terms of playing style is so different from what Wagner was trying to get this team, largely the same group of players, to do. I think that's going to take time. I think we're in a transition phase. And as a result, you know, there'll be good periods. There may be some bad periods. And if you have similar quantities of both, then you end up where? Middle of the table. So 12th, but second half of the season better than first. I think the optimism would then be that, okay, the foundations are in place. And thereafter, you know, you can attack that top six. And who knows? Of course, you know, if he pulls off an 18-19 Farker, then this looks very silly. But then, you know, won't be the first time. So 12th.
Yeah, let's hope we are made to look silly. I'll go next and I'll pass it over to Sam. I'm going with you. I'm going for what I would describe as the Mario Vrančić, where you start year one looking a little bit dodgy, but by January you think, oh, okay, there's something there. And then by the end of the season, you're thinking, okay, yeah, this year two is going to be really exciting. So I'm following a similar template. So I'm going with Norwich top of the bottom half. 13th is what I'm going for. And like you said, I think there is a utopia out there where this all clicks a lot quicker than perhaps we're expecting. And I think maybe than a lot of other people are expecting, and there is a possibility that it could ignite pretty quickly. And there is that reality. There is also a reality that this really takes a lot longer than maybe even we think, and Norwich could end up in, I'm not saying in trouble, but certainly in perhaps a lower portion of the table. So I think they're a really hard team at the moment to get a gauge of. I've seen a lot of people, in terms of predictions, put them in around the playoffs. That feels very, very optimistic to me at this stage in, you know, the context of what you've mapped out. Sarah having gone, Rowe potentially having gone, Sargent maybe even into that mix as well. So it's a lot of goals that they're going to have to replace if that comes to fruition. So, yeah, I think they're going to have a very, very, very slow start. I would even say I think August is going to be very difficult for them. Just because of maybe what we've seen in pre-season, but some of the goals they've conceded. And I think it's going to be a bit of a slow burner. And then I think it's going to be a positive end to the season that probably gives a lot more people encouragement for year two. So on the basis of what Glenn Riddlesholm said and turning a ferry in a lake, which is a quote I think we'll be coming back to, I am going to go for a 13th, but one that ends in hope and optimism. Sam?
Yeah, probably speaks volumes that the highest finish predicted out of any of us is going to be 11th for me. I think they've got a good coach in Turrup from what we've seen so far. They seem to be heading in a decent direction, and the signings, especially in the last couple of weeks and what they're working on right now, seem to be pretty exciting ones, and they seem to be going quite well in that sense. But there's still a lot of time to iron those things out. The number of basic concessions, I think, as both of you have referenced really in pre-season, means that I have got some defensive worries for Norwich. Also, when I saw that squad listed, how it is in the squad numbers, it did outline to me that this isn't a set of players that right now is ready to challenge for really the top six. But I do think they've got enough positive elements and they're heading in enough of a positive direction that, pretty much similarly to you, I can see them finishing the season quite strongly, maybe heading up from sort of the middle of the lower section of the table up to an optimistic 11th place finish. But yeah, hopefully we're all proven wrong and they can make it click very, very fast indeed. But just from what we've seen in pre-season and the way that the squad looks, I do think it will take too much time for Norwich really to be in that promotion mix this season.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We're all expecting some turbulence, and probably where Norwich City end up probably depends on how big that ends up being and how long it ends up being, because you know it could be 3 games, it could be 1 game, it might be 10 minutes, it might be, you know, it could be anything. So that's the reality. I also think mid-table probably shows we're not quite sure, because that gives you enough leeway, I think, either way. But yeah, it's going to be a really, really interesting campaign, and we are going to have it covered throughout across all of our channels. We'll be doing podcasts after every game, starting in the wake of this game on Saturday at the Kassam, 12:30 kickoff. I don't know if we started this pod with you boys saying you were about a 6. Any advances on 6 now we've gone through the whole pod? Either of you feeling any more excited about the championship season?
No,
not really.
Brilliant. Excellent. What a great way, to end. Hopefully you're feeling more excited than the boys alongside me. We'll be at the Kassam. We will hopefully see some of you there. And yeah, let's see how it goes. All aboard, everybody. It's going to be a long, long season. Thanks for watching. See you soon.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.